Blog Talk Radio.
Mother Earth Show. I'm your host, Golden Hawk, and I am delighted to tell you I'm joined by my co-host tonight, the beautiful Janine Kimmel. Thank you
Hello.
For joining us, Janine. Yay!
Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming, listening to us.
Hold on. Why? Yes? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Al is not hearing us in the other room, so he's going to see if it's us.
Oh.
Okay. No, we're on the F.
Okay. Good. Hello,
also.
Everybody.
Hello, everybody. Oh, and my special guest who's on the road tonight. Hello, Greg. Yay! A really dear friend of mine is listening tonight, and he couldn't have picked a better show to listen to because we're going to be diving deep into this whole concept of time and you know, right? When you think about time, time is so clearly not just, you know, 12 numbers on a circular thing with a couple of batteries in it hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
Time is a lot deeper than that.
I think time moves differently for different people. And, you know, we were talking about multiple timelines, and I do think that that's a subtle noticing, but a noticing on my part.
Yep.
Yep. And
yep.
Yeah. And,
yeah. Well, and if we could, what I want to do is I just want to share a real quick story about divine time, because it's something I experienced today. And, you know, me and Janine are definitely, this is all about, you know, this talk show is about pretty much what's going on every 7 days with us. And I thought it was really interesting. On my other radio show, another reality show, I have interviewed recently what I would call somebody who's in the spotlight right now in the New Age / UFO paranormal arena, and his name is George Kavafalis, and he's actually become a very dear friend of mine, and, you know, he's a great guy. And what's very interesting is because I've interviewed him, first of all, we have hit over 2,000 people have listened to the archives, which is my largest show to date, which I'm very excited about. Many people have heard the interview. But what's interesting is George's people put it on YouTube, and as Janine was sharing with me prior to us coming on the line, when you start getting into a larger audience, you're going to get polarity. You're going to get people who love you, people who hate you. And on some level, I have been relatively protected. I'm going to use that word intentionally. Relatively protected from negative comments about who I am, because I've pretty much, you know, I've just broadcasted to a very small audience who was, in my humble opinion, you know, just as deep down the rabbit hole as I've been. And, you know, it was pretty much the people who enjoyed my perspective were, you know, are the people listening to me. George coming in with his larger audience clearly is attracting, you know, as me as an interviewer, a larger audience. And so what I really just want to share is the frequencies of late for me are really becoming, the clarity I'm getting is just profound, that energy for me right now is creating shifts. It's creating shifts in my physical body. It is creating shifts in my level of awareness. It is creating shifts in how I behave and how I'm responding to everything. I mean, literally everything. So when this negative comment came up on YouTube, you know, I went to it and I saw it, and, you know, in all honesty, I'm kind of in a space right now where, you know, today in particular, I just woke up feeling very heart-centered and really grounded in, you know, I am who I am, I know who I am, and, you know, let's see what beautiful, you know, little gems and jewels are, you know, going to be scattered on my path today. And what was scattered was, you know, basically, you know, dog poopy. There was dog poopy on my trail. And it was so interesting because of the space and the frequency that I'm in. I took this guy's energy in. I mean, I could feel it. As soon as I connected with the message, I took a breath. I could feel his animosity directed towards me. It came into me. It was energetically expanding me. But it was really, I was just at the place where it was like, hey, that's cool that you don't like me and like how I interview people. And my response to him was basically, you know, if you don't like me, feel free not to listen, which is, you know, we all have the free will. If you don't like what you're hearing, don't tune in.
Right.
So I just thought it was really divine and divine timing, because you couldn't have picked a better day for me to feel in my heart to read something that, you know, there was a time in my lifetime where I would have analyzed that, I would have focused on that. There could have been 100 compliments, and the only thing I would have seen was the one person that didn't like what I did.
Yeah.
That was not the effects today. Today, I kind of, you know, I experienced it, and, you know, I was like, I actually felt like I was initiated into something bigger, because I've been on the air for 5 years. I have not experienced the negative comments about me, and today I did. I was like, oh, I'm getting bigger. This is cool. And, you know, I just wanted to share that, you know, in divine timing, when we're strong enough and when we're really, I'm going to use the word ready, I believe awarenesses will come in, that when we're in that space, you handle them so differently than if you're still in a space where, you know, in your own personal experience, the light and the dark are still fighting each other. Because my truth is, I'm integrating my darkness. That was like what the majority of the show about me and George was all about. And, you know, it really is the truth that when you're integrating it, if people show up, you know, with this whole, you know, finger pointing, the guy didn't like my giggling. He was like, your giggling is ridiculous. Knock it off and let George talk. And when I read it, I giggled. I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, some people love the giggle. Some people, you know, this gentleman didn't. I don't even know if it's a guy or a girl. My energy senses that it's masculine, but that could just be the masculine side of a pissed off woman. I don't know. So, I just wanted to talk about that, because that is one concept of, you know, of timing and divine timing that, you know, who knows, 2 years ago, just to throw out a number, if I had gotten that, if I would have been in the same response mode to it, and my truth that I know myself as I know myself, I would not have been. I would have been very upset and or tried to convince him, you know, why don't you like my giggle? What was it about my giggle you didn't like?
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to today, just allowing him to, hey, you can feel that way, and you can also feel free not to check in on the show anymore. I mean, you can do whatever you want. You can continue to comment negatively and keep listening, too. You can do whatever you want. And, you know, because I just, you know, I'm cool. Goldie's cool. And, you know, just so everybody knows, October 27th, George is coming back on the show, which I'm really excited about. But, okay, back to timelines and dimensions. And,
well, But I'd like to contribute to that. Having written a book, it was also an initiation for me to get some woman out of nowhere just randomly, give a negative review, and it seemed like I had triggered something in her. It is part of the willingness to put yourself out there in the world. Risk-taking is when you're standing out there, when you're giving your voice, when you're putting out your books or your paintings or your work, you know, you're exposing it to all different kinds of people. And it was also a really good learning for me about internal strength and about just allowing. And at first, you know, when I first saw it, just like you, it was like, ooh. But then I realized this is valuable. This, you know, how do I handle that? You know, is that gonna crush me? Is that gonna make influence me? No, actually. And you know, I found it to be another growing place for me. So
I agree.
I experienced it, and it is heart medicine, because when you're centered and you stand behind yourself and your work, or you don't, but this does help you sort of almost like the instrument that's finely tuned. Like, I just found myself readjusting myself to my own, you know, sort of tone, and I moved on. And so this is just part of it, and I really get it. And perfectly timed in this story is the fact that one of the things that I have noticed about dealing with these times of uncertainty, which include, you know, maybe negative reviews, I have noticed that, and it's verified in a book, that the gift of humor and laughter are, I would say, in the top five of, maybe even way up there, even one or two, in terms of dealing with the uncertainty. And what really struck me when you were talking was that when I wrote The Magic Gown, and the little girl goes through the third door, and she ends up standing frozen, not able to move, in the great desert of uncertainty, and she was scared. And there was nothing there but black sky and a little crescent moon slice. And she no stars whatsoever. And she thought, wow, that's bizarre. And she was so frightened, but going backwards was not an option. And she scared herself so much that she decided she had to make a move, or somebody would get her there. So she moves, and she comes across the most incredible king that lives in the desert. And he's an incredible purple pink dragon with wings, and he is got the humor down, and and he teases her, and he's good at it in a playful way, and he says his name is Mr. H. Murr, and you know, she said, oh, well, what's the H for? And he said, guess, you know. And she went through Harry, Herman, Harry, you know, all different. Nope. So finally he tells her, it's Hugh. And she goes, and he goes, get it? And, you know, she's just staring at him like, no. And he says, humor. And she gets it. And all of a sudden she bursts into laughter. Now, this is a scared little girl in the great desert of uncertainty, you know, pulled into a land that she doesn't know what she's doing there yet. And when she bursts into laughter, all the stars appear in the sky. And the message to the reader, the message to the child reading this, the message to all of us who, you know, who are young at heart, is laughter was the key to bringing out the stars. And so, you know, I couldn't believe in that stronger. I mean, it is, you know, it is what got my family through really tragic times. But it was genuine humor. It wasn't fake humor. It wasn't, you know, it was just incredible humor. And so laughter to me, I mean, you know, it's just medicine. And
well, it's an element on the elemental chart.
I I love that.
Yeah, L.A., it's up there. It is definitely, it's a significant part. You know, it's kind of like the way I see life right now is I'm losing my mind.
Good.
And I'm doing this consciously. I'm intending to lose my mind. If you're going to lose your mind, well, then what's the lubrication that allows that to happen smoothly? Laughter.
Yeah, and here's a beautiful another – this is a great night for, you know, integration and synchronicity as we speak. Because, okay, how about this? So today I'm looking at what I've been looking at for a couple days now. It was a book written in 2006 in French. But it was just recently translated into English in 2011. And why I love it so much, and it's called Time Openings, and it's by Jean-Pierre Garnier-Mallet and his wife, Lucille Garnier-Mallet. And he talks about being in touch with the timelines of the past, the present, and the future.
Okay.
And, okay, now, one of the things that I find remarkable in what you just said is because what I've been thinking about lately is letting go of old belief systems, to me, is what creates the ability to be spontaneous and flexible and agile in uncertainty. But what you'd never have to worry about is that you would lose anything that is true or that has heart and meaning. It's impossible to, like, that will stay. But he gave this beautiful analogy about, and it's called a revolutionary discovery, and talking about emptying your mind. Okay, he said, if you hike on a hot day and you find a spring of clear and cool water, you may empty your water bottle and refill it from the spring to better quench your thirst. In the same manner, if you empty your mind from everything you have ever learned, you can start on a new basis. And that is not only amazing, but also indispensable.
Wow.
And I really feel another element. Now we have laughter and we have water, but I really feel that that is so true to sort of catching up and holding the space in uncertainty is to be willing to let go of these fixed mind belief systems and really know that what has heart and meaning is just, that's not to do with the mind, so it has nothing, you have nothing, you're not losing anything that you know, like the treasure. So, all these things were just like today, you know, and I didn't even know until 5 minutes before the radio show that you had those reviews and that, you know, you read them. I didn't know any of that. And yet, all this was, you know, about uncertainty and laughing and emptying the mind and filling it with the new fresh water from the spring. And, you know, it just seems like, whoa, this is all perfect examples of what you and I are experiencing and talking about in terms of, you know, refreshing, rebounding.
Rebooting. We're rebooting.
Rebooting.
Our system. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's really visceral. You know?
Yes, it is. Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And that's really important, you know, from the experiencing point of view. Because, you know, it's interesting. I admit, I did do an awful lot of laughing on the show with George.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with you. The following day, I was physically, my energy was physically hung over from being connected with him for 3 hours on the phone.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if people recognize this. I mean, I recognize this from doing the show for as many years as I've done the show. When you're speaking with somebody on the phone, it's not just, you know, it's not just a, you know, reach out and touch someone AT&T connection. There really is an energetic connection there. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, George's frequency is higher than my own.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the best way to describe what being on the phone for 3 hours with George was doing to me is this way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm literally spun, and in this, him spinning me, not by any intention, just by sheer physics, his frequency is more expanded than mine. It pulls me into another space. My response to that is I laugh.
Yeah.
I laugh on many levels. It's funny. When I was a kid, if I was going to get in trouble, I would start cracking up. That's just my knee-jerk reaction. When I was looking over my grandfather's, looking at my grandfather's dead body in the open casket at his funeral, I didn't know what to do with that. I was, I don't know, I must have been about 18, 19 years old. If I'm correct, he was the first dead body I had ever seen. And I just started cracking up over the casket. And
yeah.
I was there with my boyfriend at the time, who, you know, he was like, are you laughing or crying? And when he saw that I was laughing, he was like, you know, boy, that's really inappropriate. And I was like, I can't help it. This is not a, it's not, I'm not consciously laughing at my dead grandfather.
Yeah.
This is overwhelming to my senses. And my response to overwhelming to my senses is I laugh.
Yeah.
Just like when my mom said, you know, I better start walking home one night at like 12:30 at night when I was a teenager and she had to come pick me up across town. She was like, you better start walking now. And I had a couple of friends with me at that time, too. And I was cracking up. And they're like, what are you laughing about? I was like, oh, because my ass is grass as soon as she gets here. And
yeah,
that's how I respond. I laugh. You know, I don't. It's an energy thing. It is not. It's not. I'm not laughing at. I'm laughing in response of. In reaction
to.
Oh,
but you know, I mean, not that I'm not defending at all. But that was really obvious. I mean, that was. I know. You know. I was present.
Why couldn't you tell that? Right. Because I mean, his energy was really high. I mean, it just. Because I am hoping to have a little more self control and breathing. Because you know. And, you know, it was a big interview. But, again, the way the gentleman left the, you know, the remark, I personally, you know, that's on him that, you know, it's all good. It's all good because I do want to say one thing to be transparent, and that is always my goal. I can remember listening to other radio shows with George going, you know, I wish the host would just shut up so George could finish talking. And, you know, of course, voila, that which we –
yeah.
You know, that what comes around goes around. So there was also some irony there.
It was a first for, you know, interviewing him, and then there's probably a less, like, you know, your second time around is probably going to be very different. But
Well, I'm going to be conscious to make it different. I want to be conscious of it.
But who knows?
But who knows? That's now, exactly right.
It could be me now.
Yeah, it's exactly right. You know, but what's amazing is I'm really at the space where the frequency I'm at is really, I mean, most simply stated, I'm on a trajectory right now that I know my soul is pretty much looking outside. It's like the energy coming through my body on a daily basis now is soul. Now, I'm not saying I don't hold that frequency in a constant.
Yeah.
But it is a daily experience that every single day I know I'm in connection with my soul. And, you know, if I'm in a waiting pattern, because let's bring up the next kind of thing. The next part of time that I really wanted to talk about tonight was the power of patience.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's kind of time. I'll speak of it from my own perspective. Patience for me is that I am sensing enormous changes going on in every level, the planets, the cosmos, my own experiences, every breath I'm taking. I can sense change going on everywhere, and yet the world arena isn't showing it up at all. You know, that to know in my heart and in every cell of my being that significant changes are happening on so many levels, and yet, you know, the majority of the population of the planet, you know, still won't even acknowledge that there's, you know, extraterrestrial life, you know, outside of our planet. It's just one of the awarenesses. Forget the idea that, vegetarians go, don't eat things with faces on it, yet, you know, eating plants, well, plants are conscious beings too, and they experience fear just as much as an animal experiences fear. And that awareness of that level of life and truth is coming online for me, and it's coming online for all of us. So it's like there's all these levels of awareness, yet CNN and CNBC and Fox News, you know, they're not even covering the Occupy Wall Street events. I mean, like there's like 200,000 people sitting in the middle of New York City Wall Street, as well as about 150 all around the world, other places in the United States, as well as other countries, and mainstream media is not covering it at all. And that means that there's a lot of people that actually don't know that that's happening, even that physical level of change. You know, it's like, so patience is really, you know, almost like this, it's like an unseen angel that, you know, it's a stream of consciousness that, you know, my life personally must be tempered with this angel of patience, because there's nothing I can do to make it appear in the world arena any time other than the time it's going to. And I have to hold my bearings for my own sanity to be in line with that. You know, it's a fine line, because, you know, I'm doing the radio show kind of, you know, expressing things like, you know, by the end of October, we should have a second sun in our solar system. You know, that's, you know, if you're not up to date, if you haven't been following certain things, you know, certain cosmological things, or certain listening to certain people sharing, you know, their wisdom on what's going on in, you know, in the cosmos. And I get that can just sound just absolutely delusional, you know, and it's like, so there's a fine line. And personally, you know, humility and patience seem to go hand in hand. Because humility says, it really comes down to it. I'm not going to stop saying my truth out of fear that I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Because what I'm speaking, I really, it's in my heart. I do feel it in my heart that this is the truth. And I'd rather risk being wrong to be in the integrity that it says, well, I'm sharing my truth with you. Because I think if we're prepared for these experiences before the mass media decides to report on it, it can be much more beneficial to us from the internal part of who we are. You know, and it really is, this is a game of where we're placing our internal awareness. Are we placing it in the hands of anything outside of us, or are we placing it in the wonderful comfort of our own knowingness? That is literally your soul within you.
Because
it seems like, I know there's wars going on in Iraq, and there's wars going on all over the planet, but the unsung war is the war between the battle of your attention going within and your attention going without.
Yeah.
That's the war that is being fought here. And if you don't know it, you know, it's easy to get caught up on the outside and make choices that you might not necessarily make if you had some preparation and were dealing from the inside.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that internal awareness that has, I mean, been, you know, for me, I've been really dealing with the process or the quality of patience and waiting. It seems like, and then that to me is also another form of initiation, but I do feel that I've been
deeply
connected to that waiting and patience for probably like 7-8 years solid of, and it's been a huge learning for me. And one of the things that you know, which I, you'll love this, is that I always go back to the connection to nature and Mother Earth, and the fact that the ability of patience and waiting is really a very deep feminine internal process, and it doesn't surprise me because, you know, the deep feminine nature of Earth is extremely patient and waits. Mm. And, you know, time is such a different, you know, measurement for, you know, when we're talking Earth or planetary or, you know.
Very true. Very,
right? So
very
so this,
true.
So this, you know, and I'm not excluding men here because the deep feminine nature is within both of us. And it's really powerful to, you know, really hone that patience and waiting because it's like a, I don't know, it has a presence of its own.
It does have a presence.
Yeah, you can feel it. You can feel it. You know, and I you know, I laugh because I go, I really know this from experience because I've noticed that I really do have the ability of patience and waiting, and I can share that with other people, and I have shared it with you. You know, and this it's kind of like, I don't know. It's just passing through time with this other knowing or this presence of
right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah. You know, this internal awareness, which I love how you go back in. But that creates a knowing or a sense of time that you almost look and go, okay, you know, they said timing is everything, and it's really true. I mean, you know, and timing is, and I'm getting to know more and more, and these are always very subtle for me, but like, you know, I'm like, what is that? You know, it's like listening to this faint voice where I'm starting to notice that I think that time is a different experience for people. This tapping into what possibly is already occurring that could be literally of somebody else's future, but it's my present. Mm. I mean, yeah, I'm really, and we've talked about this because this is something that, you know, we said, well, let's talk about this, you know, and I can't explain it. I can only sense it. You know, I mean, and that's kind of maybe a double entendre because maybe in sensing it now I'm trying to tell people or you that I really think that I'm on to something.
Yeah, no, and I can help explain it. I mean, from what I know, I don't know that it's a total explanation. Because, like, frequencies, dimensions, and timelines are all synonymous. It's almost like they're different definitions for the same experiences. So we all know different frequencies create different experiences. Different dimensions create different experiences. Therefore, timelines are just literally about different experiences.
Yeah. But what's so interesting, though, is like what I might be sensing now could be someone else's future. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
Like, I'm saying to you, well, it's already happening. And then, you know, someone else would be, you know, that might be years from now for them or, you know, but it could be the future of another is the present for me now.
Right.
I know.
And no. And these are the timelines because, you know, my belief and, I don't want to call it a knowing because I admit I'm still off, you know, I'm on both sides of this one. But, you know, I'm supportive of the idea that between December 2012 and March 2013, the planet's going to take those 3 months to go straight up on her axis. And on the spring equinox, Mother Earth is going to go supernova into, you know, and you know, go from a third dimensional planet to a fifth dimensional star, which is still a planet. It will radiate in the sky as a star. Now, you know, with that, okay, let's just hold, you know, we're going to look at that truth and go, okay, so essentially I've got a year and 2 months worth of basic, you know, time to be lived on this planet as it is. You know, as nature being what nature is me. You know, and it's like there's a lot. How can I put it? It's like I hear a lot of people, you know, channelers as well as just lay people, you know, that, you know, are on Facebook and stuff going, you know, talking about any, you know, any date beyond 2013. And my feeling is that them speaking of that is a truth for them.
Mm-hmm.
And my resonance, my pull to this truth of the planet going into a star is the truth for me. So however, I'm not quite sure how the frequencies pull us into these dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
But in other words, it really is, it's parallel universes. In other words, all of these dimensions and timelines are true for everybody. And, you know, however that's going to play out, you know, I don't know how to describe it in the sense of other people. I just get the sense of for myself, you know, for me, I am not distraught
mm-hmm.
over the idea of basically the planet's ability to inhabit third dimensional beings coming to a close by December 21st, 2012. In other words, you know, that idea for me is something I have been working towards for the last 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, for me, that's not, you haven't sentenced me to death in that. You have just given me the greatest gift you could tell me. It's like, yes, all that I have focused on and all that I have desired, you know, is coming to fruition. And I think, because I get the sense that what's going to be happening in the next 14 months, no matter what the physical results are going to be, is going to be something all of us have dreamed about. Because I know a lot of people have dreamed of getting off this planet because they just don't like being on Mother Earth. They don't like it. They don't like the experiences. They don't like their lives. You know, so I really believe that, well, there'll be plenty of room to experience that, you know. Aliens are going to come down and say, listen, you know, the planet's unstable. Come with us. You know, we're going to take you to another planet that's stable and where you can live out your wildest dreams. So it almost seems like in the divine intelligence behind all of this, there really is no losing situations. It is literally win-win for everybody, no matter what the idea is of the win. It's accommodating to everyone. And, you know, doesn't that kind of just feel like, for me, that's like, wow, now that's the intelligence behind all of this, that somebody could want to be on one level, somebody would want to be on another level, and life itself just accommodates all levels. It's just,
yeah, and they will be.
And
right.
It will be.
Yeah.
So there has to be multiple timelines because 7 billion people are not all having the exact same experience. That's obvious. And I've known that, you know, for many moons that, you know, I didn't always resonate with many people on the planet. So why would I resonate towards this great shift with everybody? And I'm grateful because I don't choose to leave Earth. I choose to be birthed into the new Earth, the Homo Illuminis, you know, the beings of light.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whoa, that is seriously where my intention has been. I mean, like, every single day for the last 16 years.
You know, it's funny. It's funny because I wrote The Magic Gown, the book, after the R, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and it's all, it, you know, to this day I go, wow, you know, the unfolding of that was not a thinking process. It just was a creating process that, you know, I was following, I was cooperating with, but it wasn't like it's not like I sat down and wrote out my outline, and it was none of that. It was always surprising to me. And
right.
What's so amazing, because what you described to me is what I believe I was portraying in The Magic Gown, because literally, this young girl goes through these doorways, and these doorways led to a place where time was different, and it was illuminated, and but it, you know, But there was this reason that she was getting this magic gown, which was symbolic for something, and it was the deep feminine nature, and it was something, you know, beyond the mundane. It was the, you know, but yet it was something for the people. So, you know, to me, it was almost the mystical and the practical merged into this symbology. And I still look back and go, I really think that that's what the magic gown's about. It's about a moving through and ascending into this new place of, you know, I guess that's what, you know,
some people are calling it rapture. You know, I get that there's some
rapture really go
connotation, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't resonate
with that either, but
yeah.
I heard it, and I'm like, so you know, you got to throw
yeah.
it in, you know, because
but,
you know, many of
yeah.
us came from a religion. One, you know, most of us came. Most of the people that are listening to this show or anything that I'm doing come from
yeah.
the space of, you know. They didn't like their religion. You know, they were looking for something else. I don't believe I have a lot of born-again Christians following me. That's just,
yeah.
you know, it, call it an intuition, but that's kind of what I'm, you know, feeling.
Yeah.
So, but nonetheless, I mean...
Well, yeah, so it's so funny because I look back and when I was writing that and I'm just like, I really think that's what I was tapped into, which was, once again, the future, you know, happening
right.
in the moment, and
visionary, yeah
that exactly, that is the word, actually. A visionary perhaps taps into the future and creates it in the now, you know.
Yeah.
And so
that would explain why you're so patient too, because see, the visionary has to know patience, because you're literally bringing in that which from maybe an individual point of view can be experienced. But from a global point of view,
yeah,
it's not going to be experienced yet.
Right,
yeah.
Right. The time isn't always for everybody, so you're ahead of your time, so to speak, or you're waiting.
Yeah.
You wait a
yeah.
lot. Well,
yeah,
you
have to
lot.
Wait only from the point of view of it being coming into acceptance from the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not from your own point of view.
No.
You
for others.
You wrote it.
Yeah, for
right.
others.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so that's... I still every time we talk about this, I go, wow, that's what was going on, you know, and
yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's just part of the and I was just thinking today before the show, I was laying quiet, which I usually don't, but I was like, I'm just going to be quiet for like before the show and see, and all of a sudden it just came to me how important. And I wrote it in Facebook. You saw it, that the balance of the mystical and the practical is so, I think, the way to be in this uncertainty. And there's something that the uncertainty doesn't feel like a foreign, scary, you know, monster.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It feels benevolent. It's unknown,
just,
but
or,
it's a benevolent unknown. Yeah.
Or it's just natural. You know, it's a natural
yeah.
part of life, uncertainty. And if you can become better at it, which, of course, when I studied for a year about, it was called The Way of the Warrior, how to be in uncertainty and, you know, kind of almost get better and better skilled at being in uncertainty. You know, I had this experience that we did this ritual, and into the ritual space, and this was always surprising, so that you know, it's really important to be, you know, the spontaneous and the unexpected, but into this ritual space came someone dressed as death, and it was really powerful that you know, and scary. I mean, it was a really good costume, by the way, and basically death visited each person that was studying there, and you had to put these in like five categories, these very important like relationships of utmost importance, your gifts of utmost importance, meaning what you came to the world with, your just all these important things. And death walked around, and at first death took something from you. And it was awful. It was, I mean, it was like, you know, you look down and you're like, ah, no, not that, you know, not that relation. But yeah, death just took it. Then, as death moved around the room, it started asking you to give them up. And it was a process of, say, you know, 20 minutes, that by the time death was finished, you had nothing in front of you. And it was a very, very powerful experience of feeling the power of having everything taken away, and there you are left, and you're just left with you. And it was like I said to these people that were the facilitators of this great workshop, I was like, that was, you know, I mean, you literally could kind of not talk after for a while, and you were really affected, but it was truly the powerful weekend that of the four that I think shape-shifted me for, you know, another place or another way of dealing with uncertainty was this experience of, in ritual space, death visiting me and taking everything. And yeah, was it metaphor? Yeah. Did they really take it? No, but I'll tell you, it felt pretty real, you know, and it was a great exercise, you know.
It's a phenomenal exercise.
Yeah,
it's
and I don't recommend it. I don't recommend people doing it casually. It should be done with respect and in ritual, because you have to be prepared for this. It's not as, oh, really? That doesn't sound hard. It is hard. And yeah, but when you said to just now a little while ago how you're, you know, this isn't about dying. This is about like the dream coming true, so to speak, or this, you know,
yeah,
this timely. What you've been waiting for. I mean,
well, this is about the birthing of a new species of human beings. I mean,
yeah, but what I think also is why a great practice is to confront your feelings on death, because because everybody wants to be like, it's the elephant in the room, so to speak, like, yeah,
yeah.
That, you know, and it's like, no. The ultimate teacher is the letting go of everything, and then that's when you receive everything. You know, it's just amazing, and it sounds so what's the word? I don't know, like,
well, esoteric.
Yeah,
you know,
it does sound esoteric, but I did experience it. So, you know, and you know,
well,
that I
mean, I've experienced death, you know. Like, I've been shot point blank in my head in a dream.
Oh.
Yeah, and it was when I was working with Don Jose, the shaman from Ecuador, and
mm-hmm.
I think
a form of death.
Well, no, absolutely, because the first thing it taught me was that I was still conscious. In other words, I was still alive, for lack of a better word, and I literally said to myself after, like, I was sitting in the back seat of a convertible, a guy jumped on the back, he carjacked the car, he held a gun up to my head, and he pulled the trigger twice.
Yeah.
So my head kind of landed in my lap, and I was definitely still aware, mm-hmm. aware enough to go, well, I'm not going to put my head up again so he can do that again. Mm-hmm. You know, I was literally like,
yeah.
It did not hurt. There was not a pain, but there was a blunt feeling to my head that, you know, I became lucid in the dream and went, well, Jesus, I just got shot point blank in my head, but I'm not dead. You know,
yeah.
Clearly when I woke up from this dream, I remembered that. And so it takes contemplation, because I think what's so beautiful about the experience you had with your teachers is, because I think it's really important to say this, and this definitely, you know, I'm going to kind of focus this to my beautiful 919 friend out there. This is not about you have to give up your worldly stuff in order to experience the everything. But if your worldly stuff is what defines who you believe you are, then when it comes time to give it up, it could be a very painful situation. Like I've experienced the death in the dream. I've
when I was 14 years old, my house burnt down to the ground, and we didn't take a whole lot out of that house. Believe me, we didn't. Even the stuff we could save, most of it got mildewed because it took us like 4 months before we were even allowed to go into the house.
Yeah.
You know, then there was a time when I was 30, and I was living with my boyfriend and my brother, and I had a life-changing experience. I moved home. I left all my stuff in the apartment. Then there was the time when I was 42 when I moved back home from Buffalo, and if it didn't fit in my car, it didn't come home with me. There is a certain understanding. Stuff is definitely a part of this dimension, and it absolutely should be enjoyed in this dimension. But we are not just of this dimension, and what's happening now is these cycles upon cycles upon cycles, or wheels upon wheels upon wheels, or dimensions upon dimensions upon dimensions, are coming to a close. And in the closing of these dimensions, it's almost like what we've always been told, that, you know, you can't take your stuff with you to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. You know, it's okay to live with your stuff in this dimension, but when it comes down to the earth going through her changes, and of course I'm going to speak of that truth because that is my truth. This is
right.
The truth that I resonate with. I can't take with me, you know, my crystals and my clothes and my computer. The only thing that's going to walk through that fifth dimensional portal is me, and potentially maybe other life forms. Like, I'm hoping my cat walks through with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a good feeling she's going to, because 10 years ago when I got her, I named her Dakini, and Dakini is actually the name of the guides that showed the main character of the Celestine Prophecy, where Shambhala was located in Earth, and Shambhala is the fifth dimensional experience within this planet.
Yeah.
You know, and it was what James Redfield wrote about, and it was funny because I've always known the name of my cats before I got the cat.
Yeah,
and I picked Dakini. Dakini is the only cat I've ever had, and I've had, gosh, close to 20 of them throughout my life. She's the only cat I got not as a kitten, but as a 2-year-old. She was emaciated. You know, I get all my cats from the pound, but I like to get kittens because you know, you basically, I've always felt that, you know, then they become yours. They've only known you. You go through their whole lives. You know, they love you. It's your energy. Well, for whatever the reason, when I first moved into my apartment and I was ready to get a cat, you know, I called the Humane Society. I was like, you know, you got any kittens? And they were like, no. And I'm like, what do you mean, no? And they were like, and they literally said it, it's not kitten season. And I went, not kitten season. Kittens are given, cats are giving birth on a, you know, there's no, it's not like an elephant where it takes 18 months to birth these things. I'm like, we are talking cats that are rampant everywhere in the world. And, but it was literally life setting it up that I got Dakini.
Yeah.
And when I got her, you know, it was a totally different experience dealing with a 2-year-old cat who was emaciated, lived on the street. She had issues.
Aww.
She still to this day, you know, has a pee-pee problem. but the idea that when my soul told me call her Dakini, I'm really understanding now that the energy I put into saving her, in the sense of bringing her back to life, letting her know she is safe, letting her know she'll never be left alone again. She'll always have food, you know. She has all the freedom to come and go she wants. She's an indoor-outdoor cat. She mostly stays inside by her own choice. But everything I've given to her, it's my understanding, when it comes for me time to walk through that fifth dimension, she's going to give it to me.
Yeah.
I mean, and even before that, the days and nights that I have spent transmuting this darkness within me that needed to just be transmuted by me experiencing it, I didn't want any people around me when I went through that. It's a painful experience, but it's a necessary one. And the one who was there for me was my cat. You know,
yeah.
So I didn't feel alone. And, you know, so, you know, like where you're writing the book, I'm naming my cat the Dakini. You know what I mean? It's like these are kind of like the little pieces of trail mix that we left in our consciousness
Yeah.
To let us know that when life starts getting really kind of wild and crazy, like, you know, we're talking about things like another sun coming into our solar system, yet, you know, if you turn on the 5 o'clock news, nobody's talking about that. You know, they're still just talking about who got raped and who got held at gunpoint. You know, it's like, so we're knowing these changes. They're not showing up in the world arena yet. And yet if we look from a subtle point of view, which clearly the subtle has so much to do with everything we're talking about from a time perspective, the subtle is screaming to us, you do know, you are prepared. And you did leave yourself messages to let you know that you know and you are prepared. You know, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Just a little side note. Did you ever see the movie Willow? Where it's so adorable.
Not the whole thing, but I should watch. Yes.
Well,
yes.
No,
that's
the little
Steven Spielberg, right?
No, Ron Howard.
Oh,
and
even better. I love him, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, so the little baby girl that is born that's special, that's supposed to save the kingdom or the world. She's let go downriver, and these little kind of dwarf people care for her, but she's a Daikini baby because that's what they go, she's not one of us, we can't keep her. And, you know, her name's Alora Dana. I mean, I love the film, and because all those things are right up my alley. But I do remember the little kind of like Hobbit children were like, but that's a Daikini baby. So,
Nice.
Such a cute. Yeah, so it's a sweet movie if you ever.
It's funny because I just went on a binge. I bought like 6 movies. Kind that they mean something to me, but on Amazon they cost $1.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm going to get Willow next. Yes.
It's really sweet. Really sweet.
Yeah, well, and it's appropriate because I love that. You know, the movie is showing me, because, you know, this is also kind of to do, when you're living a visionary experience, you don't necessarily go to, I'm not going to go to, what's that cop show,
I don't know, you mean all those, like,
Order.
Oh,
I'm not going to go to Law and Order, you know, to get my visions and my confirmation. I'm going to go to the Sci-Fi Channel. You know, I'm going to go to
Willow. Go to Willow. It's
right,
great. It's both a really great film with wonderful meaning. Well done. Val Kilmer's hysterical. And it's also got really good humor in it. You know, it's a perfect magical.
I will see it. I will.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it if you want. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally resonate with them.
Yeah, straight up my alley.
Yeah, exactly. And mystical.
You know,
yes.
Yeah,
yes,
when you know, my new book comes out, you'll see how much I'm influenced by all these stories. So,
Nice. Okay,
yeah.
Well, there's other aspects, too, because another important aspect to time is spontaneity and synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize I am separating these into, you know, defined words, when the truth is that none of this can even be separated. You know,
right, it's all living experience. Yeah.
Right. We're just kind of being a little bit, you know, suggestive in the actual perception, because spontaneity and synchronicity clearly go hand in hand with patience and, you know, and frequency and timelines. But I do really feel that right now there is, again, to reference James Redfield, the 12th insight clearly says that, you know that you're in another frequency. You're in the divine expanded frequency when you have synchronicities happening. And it's like living from a space, you know, at this point, me and Janine kind of laugh. You know, I'm kind of speaking to the audience right now. Me and Janine laugh. There is no planning for our future. You know, are you kidding me? I'm like, just to have a gig on Wednesday night, like I got a Wednesday night nanny gig, you know, you can't believe how much energy it takes for me to just help me remember that. Because I just get, like, I would not have known today was Columbus Day
I found out as time went on today, it was like, oh, there's a holiday today. What's the holiday? You know, I am just clearly becoming detached from the things that make, you know, the time of Monday through Friday and weekends significant, the things that are culturally mass consciousness I'm unplugging from, because I'm no longer seeking to create in those structures. The structures that I want to create in are really in the eternal, in the timeless, in the soul. And, you know, it's not to say, you know, I definitely still, you know, Monday nights at 8 o'clock, I do a radio show. Yes, indeed. But one of the things that is important for me to distinguish while I'm saying this is everything I do now, I do it because I enjoy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing I have to do in order for my survival nothing is relying on my survival. Yet my survival is being taken care of because, in my humble opinion, as long as I'm doing the things that I enjoy doing, that which I need for survival is coming. It's just coming. That's the spontaneous and the synchronistic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm experiencing the same thing. And there was, some, you know, I can't tell you when it was, but there was a corner I turned where, you know, whether it was a letting go, a surrendering, I don't know. But it seems as though, and maybe trust is a big one there. But
Definitely. It's
what I do, and there's multiple things, but they're just showing up and unfolding. And it's not like I haven't done the foundational work. I have, but the way it's like. It's like, you know, something comes up and it's like, oh, and then it comes up and it comes up, and it's just like, it's becoming such a natural way for me to be. And it's also, same as you, the things I love to do and sort of I feel were born to do. And, you know, it's just how it is. And it feels really good because I never really liked the intense structure of something. It never felt natural for me, but you know, when you had to do something, you were like, well, you know, I better do this. But now it's a different timing, and it's fun.
Absolutely.
It's fun.
Absolutely.
Because even
exactly.
with our show, I love the trusting, because this is also practice about being good on your feet. And hey, if you're not good, you're not good. But, you know, maybe that'll happen too. But it's like just saying what needs to be said, what should be said, what we all would like to hear, it will reveal itself. And
well, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a trusting thing, and I really love that, you know. I guess.
Well, speaking of trust, you ready for a caller?
Yeah.
Okay, because just so everybody knows, I know that there was a caller that was queued up in the first hour, but I like the idea of us kind of establishing the topic. And so this way, when you come on to share, you share in, you know, with a groove to what we're talking about, as opposed to, you know, something that's kind of just more left field.
Okay.
So area code 201, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening. May the peace of the inner light be with all of you tonight.
Thank you. May I ask what your name is?
My name is Christopher. I'm from New Jersey.
Nice.
New Jersey.
Hey, Christopher. Jersey's in the house.
Yes, this is my first time calling you guys, so
well,
I'm very
thank
honored
you for
to
calling.
Be here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so can you share? Have something to share or a question or?
Well, I've been watching what's been happening with the universe lately. It has been very chaotic. I've watched, but in a positive sense, there's positive chaos with what's going on. And I do not think that people quite understand that most of them have been saying, like, the end of the world as we know it and everything.
Uh-huh.
And they're all superstitious and everything. And I don't think it's the end of the world. I think it's the beginning of a positive change, a new direction for the Earth. Because my mentor said it, a great human revolution in one single individual will help achieve a change in the destiny of an entire nation, and further will help achieve a change in the destiny of the entire human race. There is always something there. There's always something responsible, and people are taking responsibility for their lives. And I believe that's so important now more than ever, that if we take the time to look at the earth and why it's being called out to us, it's a warning to say, look, this earth is falling apart. We need to stop it now before it gets out of control so bad it's going to be out of balance, or as the native Navajo language calls it, Koyani's Kutsi, which is life equally out of balance, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Balance is key.
That's
you
right.
Know? Yeah.
Being born autistic, I can understand how important it is for citizens like myself to make a stand. So I really hope people can heed the message of Earth.
Wow. That's so beautiful for you to call and share with us. Thank you so much. I'm from New Jersey as well, you know.
Great. Speaking of which, I have a radio show on Blog Talk Radio, which is called Youth Worldview. And I hope everybody gets a chance to listen in, which is blogtalkradio.com/JerseyJustice29.
That's great.
Nice. And before we get into that, let me ask you a question, though. Do you feel that the Earth is a sentient being?
It is an sentient being. We're all sentient beings of the Earth.
Aww.
Well, but do you believe that the Earth itself has a consciousness in and of it, like the planet itself is a whole being? Because I agree that we're sentient. I believe that
yes.
We're like the sentient cellular structure of
yes, it is.
The Earth, which is the whole being, right? Do you
yes,
believe that
is.
As well?
Yes, it is speaking to us.
Oh,
it is saying,
exactly.
It is crying out for change.
Well, and in my humble opinion, as I feel like my consciousness as a whole, I have for a few years now been speaking to myself. In other words, if I stub my toe, at this point, I've trained myself that before I even say ouch, I'm already speaking to myself, commanding myself to go back into a pristine state, which is where they were prior to me smashing it up against whatever I just hit it on. So I feel that as a whole being, my body has more influence over my cells than they do from an individual point of view. And I apply that to the macrocosm of the whole planet. You know, Mother Earth as a whole being has expressed tremendous patience, tremendous compassion in allowing her cells to play out very third-dimensional experiences, the wars and the poisoning and the destruction. But in my humble opinion, Mother Earth is now choosing that her cycle is coming to a close, and either you honor and you go through the cycle of the birthing process with her, or you get the heck off of her, because nothing's going to stop her once she, you know, really goes into full-blown, what I would call labor pains, you know, when she really starts birth. Because what she's going to be birthing is actually within her right now. The core of her essence is not the core of iron. It's a crystalline light that she's going to birth, you know, beyond the outer shell, beyond the outer crust of the planet. And it's like, I love that you said that you were autistic, because, see, I know intuitively you're wired to know this. You know what I mean? You came into this. I believe autism is really just another word for time traveler. You come into this experience much more compatible with, like, let's say, Windows 23, when the rest of the planet's on Windows 7.
I hear ya. And I
yeah.
hope everybody gets to have that more higher subconscious to see at the Earth more powerfully, to realize what they're doing is hurting and abusing it. And we need to really look at ourselves first to change the planet around.
Right. But when it comes down to it, Earth herself will make the choice that when it's enough abuse for her, because she's now in labor, that choice will be made. You know, in other words, the cells of her planet, or the humans, or the aliens, or however you look at it from the microcosm, it could never overpower the wholeness of her being. She's choosing it. In other words, she's allowed us to go through these temper tantrums, for lack of a better word, and unconscious moves and unconscious experiences.
But in her allowing it, you know, never confuse kindness with weakness or compassion with ignorance. Mm-hmm. She has known exactly what she has allowed us to do, and she has also known when it's time for her to birth this new experience. You know, she's birthing it. It's just, we're in alignment with that frequency, or we better be very far away, because if we're not very far away, we won't make it. You know, that compassion will come to an end, because she's been in this dimension for billions of years, and she chooses now to, as a sentient being, to go to her next level of consciousness. I think it's fantastic, personally, because, you know, I just don't think enough people on the planet give her the credit. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's like, you got to help Mother Earth. It's like, Mother Earth is, and I'm not saying she's not suffering from the damage we've done, absolutely, but it's almost like her personality, her ego is suffering. Her soul knows exactly what's happening, just as our egos may suffer if we go through, you know, certain losses, but our souls know that there's divine order for having that experience.
All
that
right.
Make sense?
And I love how you said that she's speaking to us, because I really do feel that when you're deeply connected to her, you hear her, you feel her, you know. And you know, a lot of this show is about that.
Exactly, the Mystical, you know, Mother Earth Show.
Mystical Mother Earth Show.
Yeah.
All right,
thank
guys.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you calling.
And what's your radio show again?
From you again.
Youth Worldview, and it's on blogtalkradio.com/JerseyJustice29.
Great.
And what night is it? What night does it air, or day?
Yeah, every week, on weekends, we've been doing shows on bullying, which is Bullying Prevention Awareness Month. And I got a new show coming up this Sunday at 6 called Bullying, A Call for Action, A Call for Change.
Nice. Nice. Many blessings to you and your message.
And thanks
Many
for blessings. Calling.
You're welcome.
Really nice
to
hear
from you.
Yeah,
have a great night.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Night.
Bye. Great.
Cool. Yeah.
New Jersey.
Jersey's in the house. There you go. Well, and you know, everybody knows I'm smitten with the autistic ones.
And that was wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, no, that was hot. That was hot, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, so we had a caller in the first hour and they're not there anymore?
It was Jay. It was Jay, so I'm assuming he'll come back.
Oh, maybe he'll be back.
Well, and right, I was happy to have, you know, because I saw he put it in the thing, I'm in the queue, and it's like, okay, that's cool, but...
Yeah.
I want to establish our topic before we...
Well, maybe he had
know.
To go drumming.
Maybe. It's all good.
Right?
Yeah, no, indeed. Hey, listen, it's all, you know...
Yeah.
You know, you can't go right from... You can't go within the first 3 minutes on the phone. I mean, if it was a call-in show like that, okay, but we got to...
Oh, no,
topic.
I know.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, you know...
Well, he'll be back.
Of course. It's all good. So, okay, so nobody's queued up right now, so, you know, definitely, you don't want to keep talking about... another idea that I think is really interesting, an awareness that I got is... the idea of, you know, the saying, you'll find the kingdom of heaven through the eyes of a child, or something like that.
Yes.
The
children will inherit the kingdom of heaven, or something like that. You know.
Well, because I think, you know, people are saying all the time that, you know, you can't youth yourself, you can't turn back time, you know, once you're an adult, you can't become a child kind of thing, and, you know, I disagree with that. And, you know, one of the things I'm starting to notice in this whole consciously losing my mind, you know, choosing to vibrate at a, you know, a heartfelt frequency, is I'm noticing the correlations between who I am today and who I was when I was a child, and specifically who I was prior to puberty.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was sharing this with Janine earlier today, but I definitely wanted to share it, that like some of the things I'm noticing that are really helpful ways of being is, like, for me, you know, if you think about yourself pre-puberty as a child, what are some of the qualities about who you were back then?
come to mind. Like for me, one of the things that comes to mind is that I was a tomboy.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't interested in boys from the perspective of, you know, do you like me? You know, will you love me? None of that.
Yeah.
I was interested in boys because I wanted to play touch football with them. I wanted to climb trees with them. I wanted to show them that I could play hide and go seek and hide better than, you know, I was their peer, and you know, I wanted to hang out with them, you know, just as much as I wanted to hang out with girls, but maybe a little bit more the boys, simply because I didn't mind being dirty. I didn't mind, you know, I didn't mind roughhousing per se.
Mm-hmm.
That is totally revisiting me. Like, one of the things I've noticed is that in the last, I don't know how many years, I don't know when this actually morphed, but the bottom line is I don't wear makeup anymore. I mean, and when I do wear it, I wear minimal makeup. And it's interesting because I'm no longer looking for the world to validate that I'm lovable and or beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is something I'm realizing is very childlike.
Yeah.
It's not childish, but it's childlike and it's specifically pre-puberty childlike that, you know, I dress very much in men's clothes. I love sweatpants and flannel shirts and comfortable clothes and sneakers. And, you know, I go to the woods and I love hiking. It's like, you know, these are the ways that I believe if it's another area that I'm letting go of, and it's because I'm not necessarily letting go of love relationships, but I'm letting go of the idea that my sexuality is going to be what's going to attract that relationship.
Yeah.
My beauty is going to be what's going to attract that relationship. And when I say beauty, I'm talking about the physical outer beauty. Because, you know, I'm really just starting to understand that part of the path for me in finding this peaceful space and this frequency that allows me to kind of have the timeline of the fifth dimension, none of those things matter. Meaning whether I wear makeup or not, whether a man finds me attractive or not, what size I am, how old I am, if I have wrinkles or not, what's that saying? You know, you can dress her up, but you can't take her out. You know,
yeah.
how well I get along, you know, with somebody else's friends. You know, I mean, like, it's just so interesting to me because I went through a period in my life where that didn't matter when I was the child. Then I went through puberty, and I'll be honest with you, my life personally from puberty until I hit 30 was basically one long trip of wanting to commit suicide.
Let's laugh
at that. I mean, I just never understood my life post-puberty. I didn't understand in the sense of why, you know, I just kept going, why am I not lovable? You know, and I'm not saying I didn't experience love. I did. But if you had a scale and you weighed my life from the days and times I felt lovable to the days and times I felt unlovable, a feather would be on the days that I felt lovable and a brick would be on the days I felt unlovable. You know, the rules of the games changed, and I never felt like I mastered the rules of getting a guy, having the American dream. You know, I didn't understand that.
Oh, that.
You know, I mean, like, you know, and it's like, it was funny because I always wanted a child. That never happened.
Yeah.
The love that I have now is so genuine. I mean, you know, big shout out to Polar Bear. I know he loves me. And he loves me exactly for who I am. You know, pimples and snot coming out of my nose. You know, he doesn't care if I've got makeup on. There's just a genuine love for me for being who I am. You know, and I, there's relationships I have with myself that I have, what's that word called when I've nurtured it, for lack of, I've nurtured the relationship with me, because when I first had my awakening at 30, I mean, I left what I thought, you know, I left a loving relationship, what I thought was going to turn into to find a husband to get married and have kids, because I didn't have that in the last relationship. But the whole thing ended up being that I left that relationship to find me. That was the real awakening. It wasn't about, because I got myself, you know, very, there was a time when, you know, I was like a size 2. I was self-tanning. I had fake nails. I was dyeing my hair. For all essential purposes, I was pretty. But, you know, it was like maintaining that level of true falseness. I mean, just false on so many levels. Was exhausting me. I was like, you know, when it all came down to it, and I let the color of my hair go, and I let my nails go, and I let my body go, it took on a totally different experience for me. And what I'm realizing now is who I am today.
Yeah.
Is the type of person that it all comes down to letting go of. I'm letting go of everything that is gonna that would ever keep me from going through that fifth dimensional portal. Because, see, we're not going to go in with our human beliefs, of not being good enough.
Yeah.
You don't get into the fifth dimension if you don't feel worthy. You don't get into the fifth dimension if you don't feel pretty enough. You don't get into the fifth dimension if you don't think you're skinny enough. You know, these are all the things that when you look at life, like I have looked at life, strictly from the level of, I want to get balanced and centered so I don't have to do a third dimensional experience. You know, that this will be my last lifetime in a third dimensional experience. When you look at those things, it's not just stuff you're letting go of. It's lifestyle. I mean, significant ways of living that, you know, that we've been taught are going to be the ways to our success. We're going to let go of those things as well.
Yeah. And there's such a freedom to, you know, a freedom to the child who plays and who lives life in the moment, wakes up in the day, you know, has the day, and
then
we go through all this, torture of trying to, you know, all these identities and then
expectations.
Yeah, and then you finally break through and you're like back to that freedom place again. But, you know, it wasn't easy to get there. And
absolutely.
Right. But what's interesting about that is, like, for instance, you know, a lot of the great fairy tale stories, including when I was creating a character, they're all before all that stuff happens. They're the innocence, the purity of childhood, what that represents, which is sort of the, you know, you're not distracted by all that, you know, that when you coming
hormonal.
Of age.
It's hormonal.
When you
stuff.
Come of
Whoa.
Age. And it's funny because the real fairy tales really do happen, you know, whether it's Alice in Wonderland or
Now,
Dorothy in the movie always seemed older to me, but she was portraying someone who seemed innocent You know, a lot of those stories, they just were of the childhood. And that's that freedom place, you know.
Yeah, that's the place where, you know, you find the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah, which, of course, to me, you know, I always say, well, in many ways, heaven is present when you're living that way. You know,
absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, you're touching the mystical and the magical in the everyday, you know, if you're living in that childhood place, you know, you are. I mean, you just are.
You just are. No, it really is that you are. I mean, because, you know, one of the things I got today is that, I mean, you know, wow, there's still lots of it. Like, today's Monday. I know so many people, you know, that you know, the whole thing, you know, they it's a manic Monday. They hate Mondays because, you know, their weekend is over. They're, you know, back at work. They're dealing with – in fact, I remember a stat many years ago said that suicide rates were the highest between 7 and 9 a.m. Monday morning.
Wow.
Which, you know, is when people, you know, inherently have to go back to work. And it's like,
right.
You know, that's another definite, you know, way to look at it that – you know, children, you know, the toddler years and stuff, there is no job. The only job is for you to play and express yourself and, you know, come into the world with a, you know, with no expectations other than to explore anything that your little heart wants to explore, you know,
yeah,
per se.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that's the ideal, you know.
That's
I think,
the ideal childhood.
Yeah,
right.
I think that,
right.
You know, unfortunately... for me, because of what I do, you know, I'm always trying to bring that back to kids. Because one of the things I talk about, and this is exactly what we're saying, is there has to be open time and space. There has to be time where there's nothing planned. There's nothing to do. You know, and that's what, you know, we're finding how we're living now is that the real creative stuff happens like that, you know, in the spontaneous. So I always try to talk about providing that kind of time, which is open time, you know. It's like
space. Which is the you know, time and space are actually the same thing. Time is just the denotion of wherever we are in space.
And that's hard for a lot of adults, so then they kind of subject their children to that same thing. And you know, fortunately, And
they wrote a book on it many years ago called The Hurried Child,
ooh.
Which was, you know, all about the child who, you know, had all sorts of, you know, tennis and ballet and mm-hmm. after-school activities and how they were wiping out the whole creative process because, A, the child never had time to just sit and create from its own creative mind and its own creative choices. Everything it was doing was structured, which, if I'm correct, I think the Japanese were very much a part of that philosophy. You know, their children would go to school for like 12 hours a day months a year. I don't even know if they went 10 months. I mean, they could have gone 12 months a year. You know, they were literally just producing, you know, basically human robots.
Yeah, I heard a mom like that interviewed recently. They called her, like, they called them tiger moms, and I was just like, I really don't see, you know, I know that's a choice, but, like, I don't see anything beautiful about that. You know, so that's just one of my, you know, it's so unnatural to me, so unnatural.
Yeah, and it comes from unawareness. I mean,
yeah,
they mean well, but you
don't understand.
It's just
so unnatural.
No, exactly. In Fairfield County, where I live, believe me, I mean, I'm always conscious of, you know, like with the kids that I'm nannying for, you know, they're in three things. I'm like, okay, that's enough. Let's make sure, and, you know, the mom is like, she's got 2 days off. I said, okay, that's very good. Keep those 2 days free for play dates and for, you know, shucks, maybe just doing nothing.
Doing nothing is the best.
It is the best. I agree.
Yeah, and when kids start staring and people go, what are you staring at? And it's like, maybe they're, you know, you got to let them do that. And
maybe they're daydreaming, because that's another thing that, you know, I know I was, you know, I was a total daydreamer as a kid. My mom was always fine with it. The people in school never seemed to be fine with it. And, you know, I mean, it is, put it this way, I think we're definitely at a space, and if you're listening to the show, I would, you know, really feel that at this point we get that the whole educational system needs to be revamped, whether the end of the earth is coming or not. Clearly an educational system that takes away art and music as the first as the first programs to be cut, clearly don't understand how the human experience is created, because what's created in music and in art are synapses that connect that you can't get from memorizing letters and numbers from a book. You just won't get the same creative genius
that you will through the arts.
Yeah, and Einstein.
Yeah,
and
that also includes sports. I want to say even being physical, that's also part of it as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Unfortunately, sports get convoluted through with competition. You know, they make it all about the winning instead of about the actual playing of the sport.
No, because that's very important. Because I wrote down here about the present time and that being in the body is really important.
Yeah.
So I agree that you have to really kind of know your body, you know, and be in it. And so sports is great for that, or just being physical.
And that goes for us too, adults. It's, you know, even if just being outdoors, you know, you don't want to be in front of a monitor, TV, or, you know, microwave only. You know, put yourself in front of a tree or a bush or a blue jay. It's a good thing. It really is a good thing. Or, you know, anything. Even if you just sit on your front stoop and you take off your shoes and, you know, you let your feet be in the grass. I mean, it's just kind of connecting with the natural aspect.
Hey, you know,
technology.
So today, when we were talking earlier,
mm-hmm.
You know, we traveled all around from, like, having yesterday be kind of a weird day. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay.
We can talk about that too if you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I didn't know that, I don't even know if you knew at that point, but about the Facebook comments that you know. Okay, so I didn't know about that, but.
Yeah, I don't know if I knew at that point either. No, because I would have brought it up. So I did.
Okay, so, but what was so amazing was, and I noticed this, you commented on how you felt when you first read that. And I know how I felt when I first read this one commentary of someone who wrote something about the magic candle. I was like, wow, that, you know, where's that coming from? But anyway, I remember the feeling. But today on the phone with you, we were going all over the place, and we were talking about yesterday being kind of a strange day. And I felt as though it was one of those days where you needed, well, for me, I just needed to sort of hold on and get through it. Like, there was something I couldn't describe, but I was just feeling this. It was kind of uncomfortable, but I just knew. I was like, you know, this is just one of those days. I gotta get through and get to the next. That's just how I felt. You know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't go beyond that. And then, you know, you were talking, and then, but somewhere along the very end of the conversation, you said to me, well, there's only kind of two things I'm really interested in right now, or I'm really feeling right now. And the first one, I can't remember what you said, but the second one was what touches your heart. And when you said that, it literally righted everything that was maybe feeling out of whack from yesterday for me. Like, it was just this, the way you said it, how you said it, it was so true, because it just, I felt it, and I was like, oh. And what it did for me was it validated how important that is, because it brought me right back to exactly, like, if we're in discomfort, say, like, I was uncomfortable yesterday, and you were uncomfortable yesterday, and really couldn't pinpoint why. Okay, but then let's just say you might have even already known you were going to read that Facebook thing. You know, you tapped into that maybe before you even did. I don't know. Maybe I felt just a little uncomfortable, but somehow when you said that second thing, I felt like I was brought right back to this perfect centered place, and it was like, that's it.
Yes.
And
yeah.
It was great. I mean, so it was so great that I was like, oh, I want to talk about that, because when all is not feeling good,
yeah.
If you go to that one place, somehow, you know, hopefully it'll just happen what I felt when you said it today, but it was like, yeah, and everything felt good, you know, and all the kind of strange little weird feelings kind of just dissolved. It was great. I mean, and I wasn't feeling majorly out of whack, you know, but I definitely was coming out of a day that I thought was strange, and for whatever reason, you know, and All subtleties, by the way. And so, yeah, so I just wanted to comment on that, and that if who's listening, that what touches your heart was like, it was like, yeah, that's it, you know? And I don't know
I'm trying to, I mean, because of course, as you're saying this, I'm going, okay, I totally remember the conversation, and I remember that it was, like, on Facebook, I had seen this picture of a dog that had
two deer,
a greyhound dog, and it had its paws wrapped around a fawn and its tail wrapped around another fawn. And the quote underneath the picture was basically, these were all rescue animals, and look how they care and nurture for each other, even though, you know, it was the species of dog and deer.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw that picture, because part of what was making my day so challenging yesterday was I was feeling pressure. I was feeling pressure in my cranium. I was feeling pressure behind my eyes. And I was also feeling pressure that I was insufficient. The emotional experience that I was feeling was, you know, I'm insufficient. I need to do more. And I thought it was very interesting that I was having that feeling, considering I had just finished 2 days worth of nanny work. You know, I made about $300, and, you know, when you live a lifestyle like me, which is minimal, $300 is damn near the month's rent, and I'm good. I made it in 2 days. You know, in other words, that didn't make any sense to me, because I'm starting to get to know myself well enough to go, this can't be mine. This insufficiency cannot be mine, because I just got done making 3/4 of my rent. I'm at a space where I'm cool. It's Sunday.
Yeah.
Let's relax. I've done some work. Something else will come in. I'm not worried about it, and life will go on. So I was noticing that what was going on in my mind was artificial.
Mm-hmm.
It was artificially being somehow projected to me the pressure, and the pressure that I didn't feel sufficient. So one of the things that I was saying to Janine is the way to overcome any of this mind control stuff, which, you know, you can choose not to believe it, and if you choose not to believe it, then you'll just go through life, you know, being affected by things from an unconscious point of view. But if you choose to investigate, you'll see that there really are agendas that are here to tip us, you know, to literally tip us into off-balanceness. Because as long as we're tipped and off balance, it's easier to control us.
And manipulation and deception,
which is rampant right now.
Yeah.
So there are two things that will keep you out of mind control. One of them is being heart-centered. In other words, the headache told me, just focus on the things that make your heart grow. And for me, it's animals and nature. But, you know, seeing the little baby deer, you know, with the dog, I was like, oh. And as I was looking at this picture, I literally could feel it. I became clearly aware. It was trumping my headache. It was my awareness went beyond the pressure of my headache. So living in the space of the heart trumps the mind.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I recognized, too, that totally sucks us in like a black hole into mind control, it's thinking we need to analyze what the hell is going on with us. Analyzing the mind trying to figure out what choices it's supposed to make. You know, if you lean on your mind to bring you the answers of how you're going to find your abundance, you know, how you're going to, create love in your life, all anything that you're lacking, if you lean on your mind, you are putting yourself smack in the middle of a situation that is just ripe for manipulation and deception. From beings that are beyond from energies that are beyond just the third dimension, you know. There are beings that are here that are manipulating us, but you don't have to be afraid of that. You just have to master that. And the way to master is you don't play the game. This isn't about us beating them at their own game, you know, mind control to mind control. This is about if we're in our heart, you can't be controlled by the mind.
Yeah, well, why I brought it up, too, was because it was so, you know, it was off the cuff. It was genuine. It was just as we were about to get off, and you just said it, and it was with the second, when you said what touches my heart, I literally felt it, and it, I don't know, it just shifted me, and it was great, and I went, wow, there it is, you know, there it is. It's just, yeah, and it was just, it was another, you know, when we were just going to get off the phone one other time, and I said, you know, don't ask me why I said it, but I go, oh, yeah, you should make initiation art. And you went, what? Yeah. And then that was it. You were off and running. Well, this was the same thing. It was like I had that same effect where it just clicked. And I went right into a center place, and it was like, you know, what weird feelings? There weren't any. You know, it was.
Exactly.
So it was really good, and I wanted to bring that up because it's just a great reminder for everybody.
Oh, definitely. You know, because one of the things I became aware of today through Eckhart Tolle, Eckhart Tolle has some new talks he put up where he's actually answering the audience's questions, which are, that's kind of new for Eckhart, but it's fabulous stuff. And he was bringing up the idea that, instead of putting it in Eckhart's word, I'll tell you how I experienced what he said. I got the awareness that abundance is not something that is based in the literal form of how much do you have, therefore you are abundant. Because I work in extraordinary homes of wealth where I live. I mean, million-dollar homes with, you know, with million-dollar babies. And in my 20-year tenure of working in these types of homes, I have seen many, many people experiencing lack. I mean, it has nothing to do with how much stuff they have around them. It has to do with their awareness and their feeling within themselves. Do they feel abundant or do they feel lack? And all of a sudden it hit me that, you know, the elite in this country, literally, they're like these obsessive robots. You know, there's like 1% of the United States capital is the GPS, like 1% of the population makes more than 99% of the assets owned by everybody else. You know, like, you know, in other words, we are talking about wealth that is so astronomical. And here's the funny thing. And they want more. You know, it's like they don't feel abundant, because if they felt abundant, they would just relax a little, especially as, you know, it's all starting to come crashing down. But it's greed.
Yeah.
Greed is not based on how much you have. Greed is based on you don't feel you have enough. It doesn't matter how much you have. But it struck me today then, if greed doesn't matter how much is literally accumulated, well, abundance would have to be the exact same thing. I mean, because that's the nature of a dualistic environment. You know, greed and abundance are kind of like the opposite poles, but it's like hot water and cold water. It's just the only thing that's varying is the temperature. It's actually the same thing. It's the temperature of water or
mm-hmm,
temperature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so abundance is not about, you know, how much you have. Abundance is what I have learned from personal experience. When I go within myself to find all the things I've been talking about on the show, to find my beauty, to find my love, to find, very simply stated, who am I?
Yeah.
What are the preferences that Golden Hawk likes? What do I like? Do I like the color red, or do I like the color pink, or do I like the color green? Do I like being, what season do I like? What, you know, going within, that's where the abundance lies. Because one of the things I posted on Facebook today, which just kind of rolled off my tongue, was once you learn to go within, you never go without.
That's good.
And yeah, and it was like, because the outer is really the illusion. The outer is, that's not what's real, and that's what greed shows us. Greed shows us you can have a plethora of stuff on the outside and still be feeling empty on the inside. And as long as that's the case with the dark cabal, that would clearly mean even with the beings of light, you can feel abundant if you live in a single room, you know, with almost nothing in it.
Yeah, it was probably a state of sufficiency in the interior. Like, you know, you were talking about.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'd love to look that word up later, sufficient, because I like words. But, you know, I think that, I think that insufficiency is really rampant and probably at the root of a feeling of lack, you know, like, because you're like virtually feeling insufficient. So
yeah.
So to feel or be or sufficient internally would then nullify the, you know, this feeling of lack. I mean, it just would. So.
Well, wait, here is the definition of insufficiency.
And then say the one of sufficiency.
Okay, I have to look that one up afterwards,
right.
But hopefully.
Okay.
But insufficiency, the condition of being insufficient, the inability of an organ to perform its normal function, the quality or state of being insufficient, especially a moral or mental incompetence.
Sufficiency. All right, so I wonder what.
I'm going to look up sufficiency, so.
Okay.
Okay, and sufficiency is the condition or quality of being adequate or an adequate amount of something, especially of something essential, a sufficiency of good food.
Adequate provision, especially, yeah. Enough. So, you know, if
right.
you feel, you know, if you feel you are enough.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's impossible to feel lack. You know?
It literally is.
And
it's not determined. See, the whole idea is the powers that be, so to speak, want you to believe that sufficiency or insufficiency is based on the accumulation of that which you have around you.
Mm-hmm.
When the truth of the matter is sufficiency and insufficiency, that's an inside job. Because once you master it from the inside, you know, you can have to leave your, you know, let's say you got a divorce, you know, and God knows how many divorces have we seen, you know, in all of our lives where the fighting over the stuff becomes this, like,
mm-hmm.
literal hell on earth, you know, where it just gets so ugly, the separating of assets and, you know, I mean, some people, I swear, if they could divide their children, would take a, you know, sledgehammer to the kids. You know?
Yeah. It goes way beyond, you know, the practical.
Way beyond the practical.
It becomes some sort of strange war, you know.
I mean, I'm going to use it for lack of a better. It's evil. I've seen loving
it too.
People just go real ugly.
Yeah.
During the separating of assets during divorce. Now, if sufficiency, every relationship I've ever been in, when it was time to leave, I just left. I left all my stuff with them. Simply because you really start getting to the understanding of, well, first of all, it's just stuff. You know, I can always, you know, make more money and buy more stuff.
Yeah.
And also, you know, a lot of times when I left, I was going back home to my parents' house. They had stuff, and the people I were leaving, well, I loved them at one time. You know, you guys need the stuff. I don't need the stuff, so keep the stuff. You know? Keep the stuff, and, you know, if you ever don't need it, maybe then give it back to me. You know, it's just a matter of the idea to argue and hate somebody and take them over the ringer about stuff.
Yeah.
That's a distortion. You don't want to be there. You don't want to be controlled by that sort of.
No, it's false and it's damaging, and
totally.
You know,
to everybody.
To everybody, and it's so interesting because you're bringing up a lot of things that in that training that I did for being skilled as a warrior or slash leader in times of uncertainty or with uncertainty, which is you know, when isn't that? So uncertainty is kind of natural. But besides the experience in the ritual where death came in and took everything, and we
right.
and okay,
right.
the other main point was that whenever you're feeling unstable and uncertainty, and this was a word that came up constantly, it was because we were in a state of insufficiency. And
oh, really?
Yeah, it was the word. It was, yeah. And so, and it's, you're so right on here that is the, it wreaks havoc in people, and it takes us off our center. And when we think or feel that we are enough, that you, there's just
nobody
almost,
can rock you. Nobody
yeah.
can rock you,
yeah.
including letting go of, you know, the name
yeah.
brand China and the purses and the shoes.
Oh, completely. I mean, you know, they're just something that's kind of amusing, but they're certainly, they have no hold on you. You know,
right?
No, but nothing really does. You know,
nothing does. That's
when you're
exactly
when
right.
you're in a state of sufficiency, or when you feel or know you are enough. And it's like, you know, it's like, it was really like for a year, those were the main things I bring back with me is the experience with death, where it took everything and left me with myself. And then, of course, you dealt with I am enough, or you dealt with insufficiency. And then, you know, because I just remember that word, oh, you're in a state of insufficiency, because you don't feel very good when you're in that place. You just don't. And,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So
well, because that's the nature of insufficiency.
Yeah.
That is the nature of it. Right.
So it's a really good thing.
But looking outside to fill yourself up is almost
no.
like, it's like looking at the mirror going, why don't you lose weight?
Right, you know, right.
Like, the mirror is only going to reflect you. You can't look to the outside to make the inside feel good. But boy, when you go directly to the source, the inside,
yeah.
it's amazing how the outside, it takes a completely different perspective. I mean, I definitely, it's so funny, you know, I've worked in million-dollar homes. I've been on yachts and
mm-hmm.
planes, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff, you know, but the truth is, it never really impressed me that much. Like, it, you
yeah.
know, what really impresses me is how closely connected is a family?
Yeah,
you know, are their
absolutely.
Parents, you know, they're working, but are they genuinely caring about their kids, or are they involved with their kids, or is it just, you know, it's the nanny's gig to raise the kids, and, you know, they just came out of my womb, and that's really all I want to do with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so much more value to life that has nothing to do with you know, the stock market, gold, silver, or diamonds, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing to have those things, as long as you to recognize the soul is beyond those things. It's just, so play with those things. Play with, you know, listen, I live in Fairfield County. Believe me, I play amongst the rich and the wealthy.
Yeah.
But they don't define who I am, because, you know, I drive a little Toyota Echo that has been, you know, I got a little hippie car. I got a little hippie car in a world where there's nothing but these big SUVs and Mercedes. And, you know, it's so funny, because I'll be driving through the streets and, you know, life will come up, there'll come a situation where, you know, they'll look at me in my little Toyota Echo and go, oh, you know, she ain't nothing. And boy, do I bring presence to that experience, because I don't let them bully me, you know, to waiting for them that they're going to cut me. I mean, I'm aggressive, I'm assertive, and I'm present.
Yeah.
Because in my heart, I don't care that they have the labels that they have. What to me is the genuine value is, are you present?
Yeah.
Because
in
present,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't matter what your designer you're wearing.
Of course,
you know,
not. And are you enough, which, of course, I am, you know, if you say I am enough, none of that matters. It's just all part of, you know, I mean, the experience here. But
Exactly. You know, and I'm finally coming to the understanding of, you know, like I have a joke with a lot of my friends that say, you know, when I was born, the stork was on its way to Alaska. It hiccuped and dropped me off in Connecticut. I was supposed to be raised with the wolves in Anchorage.
That is great.
You know, but I truly do understand that, you know, that there's blessings and everything. I mean, I've also, you know, I've how can I put this? In my own experiences, just because of where I live, have seen, you know, dramatic experiences. You know, living amongst the extraordinarily wealthy have, you know, there's benefit to that, even though, in all honesty, most of my life I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't resonate with wanting to buy stuff. I always resonated with the idea of, you know, let's talk about our emotions. And believe me, the wealthy don't want to talk about their emotions because they're all starving.
Yeah.
Or not all, but many of them are starving in that category. All they want to do is talk about how much it was their sunglasses are worth or where they just bought their latest shoes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't my paradise. It was my hell. But I am learning at this point, as I really genuinely have a groundedness inside my own being,
mm-hmm.
that, listen, now I'm actually going, you know, I'm rooting for some of the wealthiest people I know that you know, that they have heart and they have soul and that they're going to walk through this fifth dimensional opening with me. You know,
yeah, and all those things to me are just like learnings about, you know, rebalancing. Yeah, because, you know, just like the review or the feedback,
right.
It's all
right.
Like, you know, I take it in. I'm like, how do I feel about that? And then you know, you just seems to strengthen, you know, if you're on this kind of introspective awareness, all that just comes in and you kind of feel it, and then you come to terms with, you know, just what does have heart and meaning. And that's a good thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then if you can just have a presence in that, you know, hopefully you share it and you affect other people that way, which is
If you don't, I mean, at this point, don't worry about affecting other people. You'll affect your own world.
Yeah.
If you go within and you're right now in a space where, you know, there's confusion and there's fear and there's chaos. Go within.
But, you know, it's just so funny because you and I talk, but just the tail end of that conversation, and I heard you say, what touches your heart? And I went, ooh, and it touched me. You know,
yeah.
So
right,
it was great.
Right, okay, and it does happen, absolutely. I guess it's when you're not trying to do that I think it happens more.
Oh, no, that's exactly right. No,
yeah,
no,
that's
that was
subtlety,
perfect.
Because I have been, you know, on that whole...
You can't contrive it
because
mm-hmm.
if you're faking it, I'm mm-hmm. telling you, that you'll lose the presence. And
that's absolutely true. It's just got to be one of those moments.
It's got to be genuine.
Yeah, they're all unpredictable.
Totally.
So this was fun.
This was amazing. And we went right up to the top of the hour.
That's great.
I love you, Janine. I love all of you guys. Let's give shout-outs to Babs and Blissful, a couple of guests, and Jersey Justice with his show, and Jimmy Trius, and Susan's with us, and Polar Bear is here, and Greg
Hello.
Is on the line, and some other people. 336 is on the line. We still love you. Thank you guys for hanging out with us for the last couple hours.
Yeah, thank you so much, too. And to Christopher, was it the call from New Jersey? Was that Christopher?
Was it Christopher?
I think so.
Oh, Jersey Justice, yes. I know he's there. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was Christopher. So, yeah, thank you. That was great.
Oh, and Blissful said this was a great show. Ladies made jewelry while listening to your inspirational words. Much love to you and everyone. Right on, Blissful.
Nice.
Outstanding. So, can you share your website and where they can find you and purchase the book? And
sure.
Yeah.
thank you. Okay, so you can read about me or find out more about me or check out my pretty art at www.jlkimmel.com. And I have a beautiful children's book called The Magic Gown that I'll be doing some workshops with soon in some schools. And I do therapy in an office or on phone. So, and you can find out more about that on my website as well. So thank you so much. And, yeah, next time, next, I think I'll be on with you this Thursday, won't I?
And I'm going to announce that, yep. we're going to do a special show on Thursday about being transparent. There's something I need to share, and Janine has beautifully agreed to join me on the interview because my connection with Janine is deep. I know she'll understand, and there will be a sensitivity needed for what I'm sharing. It's a big thing for me, and I'm ready to share it. So this Thursday, join us at 8 o'clock on Another Reality Show, www.anotherrealityshow.com. And, you know, share with us, share with me, share with Janine, share with all of us as I walk down, you know, this amazing journey into sovereignty and the fifth dimension. I'm really excited. I'm so glad you guys are all here, too. It's been an amazing night. 919,
yeah,
I love you, baby.
Thanks. I'll talk to you soon, everybody.
I love you, Janine.
Love
I will talk
Goldie.
To you in a few days,
okay.
If not sooner.
All right.
Everybody have an amazing day, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye now.